Oh, yeah. All these peaches now are freestone.
Yeah.
No more cling stones. You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields. Everybody, welcome back to the podcast. And today is a very special edition of the podcast for me, especially. I have the former South Carolina Senate clerk, Mr. Jim Fields, on the podcast today. He is also my dad. Dad, welcome.
I'm glad to be here.
I know.
And I'm glad to be your father.
Right. You're my guest and you're my dad.
That's right.
Dad, I have him, everybody, you know, Dad, you're a listener, so I know I have more than one. So I know you listen to the podcast.
I do.
And I know that Vic and Greg and Seth, like, I know I have three more. So I at least have four listeners at this point. So what we want to do now is kind of move away since the legislative session has ended. And now we're going to kind of get into maybe some history, some just different perspectives on the South Carolina political system and what it has been and what it could be and what it is. And we're going to have different guests. I wanted Dad to come on the show as our first in-studio guest to just give everybody an idea of what the Senate used to be like, what, you know, how powerful senators were. They still are, but what it used to be like. So Dad, let's do a little background. Okay. You are from a small town, the town of Mackby.
Correct.
Population, what, like?
512.
I don't know what it was between the most recent census. So tell me how you got from Mackby to the clerk, to be the clerk of the Senate. Like, you started working at the gas station.
Yeah. Gas station and farm.
Yeah.
Not two of the best jobs for someone growing up.
Right.
But I went to law school. I finished Clemson. I went to law school. And my father-in-law, John Rowland, was a retired U.S. Marshal. And he had taken over the job as security for the state house. And he helped me get a page job in the Senate.
While you were in law school?
While I was in law school, okay. Right. And that evolved into the law clerk position for the Senate Judiciary Committee, working for Senator Marion Gressett, who was the president pro tempore and probably one of the strongest people in the state at that time.
And Dad, what year was this? Like, you and Mom got married in 1970?
Yeah.
So this was like the early 70s?
Yeah.
Right after y'all got married? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or soon after. All right. So you became a clerk, a law clerk.
Yes. And so, and had a good relationship. We were the only, there were only two law clerks there at the time.
Oh,
there
wow.
was no staff, no Gressett building or Dennis building. It was just the little space in the state house. And it was an incredible opportunity, an incredible job.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just before God gave me brains.
Right.
And I wanted to not stay there. Or I had several offers. I wanted to go back to my home county and be a country lawyer and one day run for the Senate.
Right. Okay.
And I almost starved to death.
Right. Right. Because you were given, you did it like a pistol whipping case, Dad, but they paid you in what?
Chickens.
Right.
Peaches.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Right.
And the day before Christmas Eve that year, Senator Gressett called me and said, would you please come back? I need you to come back and be, there's a new position of attorney to the Senate Judiciary Committee. I want you to be it. And I put my hand over my phone and said, thank you, Jesus.
Right. Right.
And we came back and that started that relationship. And it lasted to 84 when he passed away.
Dad, how much when you that job that the attorney or the lawyer for the Senate Judiciary Committee? Mm-hmm. What was your salary back then? Like your first salary?
Overwhelming, $18,000.
No way, that's wild.
It was pretty good back then.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
So what? Tell me about that position. Tell me about what the Senate was when you were when. So you start. So you went from the keeper of the Senate Judiciary, the attorney for the
keepers, right? Yeah.
Then how did you go? How would you, were you elected clerk? Because that's elected by the body.
Well, first of all, let me say this, that in those days, the senior senators were the most powerful.
Right.
And they're coming from rural areas. And the Senate was based entirely on a seniority system.
Right.
So if you in the Senate have been there a long time, you were in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And they wielded a great deal of power. I remember when the governor wanted to see Senator Gressett, the governor came to his office. Senator Gressett didn't go to his office.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And there's a story, if I may.
Sure. No, go ahead. I love it.
Before Senator Gressett, there was Senator Edgar Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And he was probably one of the most powerful people. And the story is told. It may not be true, but right. It's told.
It's been passed down yeah. from generations.
He said one day when Senator Brown was in his office, the postmaster came to see him and said, "Senator Brown, I hate to bother you. I know how busy you are." And Senator Brown said, "Come on in, son." He said, "I have a letter addressed to God, and I don't know what to do with it." Senator Brown said, "Well, of course, give it to me." So he opened the letter, and it was this lady he knew. In fact, he knew that her husband had to go to the chain gang for 6 months because he got caught making liquor.
Okay.
And the letter was very sincere. Then the senator, "I lost my husband for 6 months. I have 3 small children, and I just can't make it to survive that 6 months without some help. And I figured it out. For just food and clothing and firewood, I need $200. Please help me, God." Well, Senator Brown was touched, and on his way to Columbia the next week, he had his chauffeur stop by.
A driver.
And he went to the door, knocked on the door, and a lady came, and he said, "I know about your letter, and I really want to do something to help you. I really appreciate your position." And he pulled out his wallet and pulled out a crisp $100 bill and handed it to her, said, "I hope this helps you." Felt really good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 3 or 4 months later, postmaster shows up again.
Okay.
And says, "Senator Brown, I'm so sorry to bother you, but we got another letter addressed to God." And Senator Brown said, "Well, let me see." Same lady.
"Oh.
Dear God, thank you so much for the money you sent me. It was so helpful and so needed, and I spent every penny on food and clothing and mm-hmm. firewood. But, God, it wasn't quite enough to make it, and I need a little bit more. And this time, God, don't send it by that politician, Senator Brown, because he kept half last time."
That is amazing. I asked for 2 and only got 1.
That's
he
exactly
kept it.
Right. That's politics in its bare form.
So the senior senators at the time, did they just decide that you would be the clerk, or did they?
Well, that's a great story. I had been attorney to the Senate Judiciary for all that time. And this was 78, I think.
Mm-hmm. What happened in 1978.
I do. It was a big year for me.
Right. Big year.
And Senator Gressett and Senator Jack Lindsey, mm-hmm. who was from Marlboro County, another powerful senator, dear friend, called me in his office. And they said, the clerk, Lovett Thomas, was retiring.
Mm-hmm.
Lovett may have been there 100, 200 years. I don't know.
Right.
He'd been there as long as I could ever remember.
Right.
And they said, "You could be clerk." And I said, "Senators, I can't tell you how much I appreciate y'all offering me this job. I'm really, really thankful. I don't want to be clerk. I want to be attorney to the Senate Judiciary Committee."
Right.
And Jack Lindsey said, "Boy, we didn't say, would you? We said, you are going to be clerk." That's how they work. I said, "Yes, sir."
You said, "I'd love to."
Well, and then I said, "Well, I would like to keep my job as attorney to the Senate Judiciary."
Right.
And Senator Gress said, "Of course you are. You're not leaving me." So I had 2 jobs then, and it was a wonderful opportunity. And that was a wonderful period. I mean, we dealt with things like home rule.
Right.
We dealt with rewriting the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
We dealt with fighting reapportionment cases. I got to go in the 20s all the way for oral arguments to the United States Supreme Court.
Wow.
Second seat. So
yeah.
The opportunities were just unbelievable.
Right.
In what we dealt with. But that's how I ended up being clerk.
Dad, what did Senator Marion Gressett mean to you, and what did he mean to the Senate?
To me, he was my mentor. He became mm-hmm. my mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And he became a person of great knowledge. To be honest with you, when I first got there, I thought he had some mystical powers.
Right.
Because when I'd say, "Senator, this bill is so-and-so, and we're doing it," he said, "Well, what will happen is that bill will, finally get third reading and be amended to say this." And I said, "How does he know that?"
Right.
And then I realized, he controlled everything.
Yes,
so
right.
he could do that.
And at that point, the president pro tempore, which there is not one anymore, the president pro tempore, he ran the show, right?
He was in charge. That's right. The lieutenant governor was the president, presiding officer.
Presiding officer, right.
But he really had no power.
Right.
That was still the era of incredible legislative power and incredible power and opportunities to do things at that level that nobody else had.
And did the Senate, more so than the House, control more things at the local level of government, like in the counties? And
in the small counties, the senior senator ran the county.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's only one, at that time it was one senator, and that was just changing
right.
when I got there.
Right.
But the senators did control. I remember, Casey, that we would have to, we call them supply bills, and they were basically with budgets for county council
mm-hmm.
and school district.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Senator Gressett's brother was the chairman of the board of the school district, and he brought Senator Gressett the budget on the back of a paper bag. And then he'd give it to me, and we'd draft it into a bill, and they would pass it.
Right.
And then that would be the budget for the county or the county school district.
So the Senate passed the budget.
No, the General Assembly passed it, but
right.
nobody, if it came over from the Senate, that was it.
That was it. That's yeah. what you did.
Yeah.
What do you think? Well, first of all, let me ask you this question. Did you ever do anything that Senator Gressett didn't like?
Well, in my rookie year,
right.
They didn't have a sine die point of time.
Okay.
It was when the senior senator decided it was time. They would draw up a signed out resolution.
Wait, so you went in January?
Yes.
And whenever?
Well, I went in probably in November. And in January, I took over the clerkship.
Yeah. Right. And then, so yeah. when y'all went into session.
That's right.
In January, you didn't have a time. You just kind of.
That's correct. When the senior leaders decided it's time to go home. Now, the budget had to be completed, as
right,
always.
Right.
And those things. But that was it. Yes.
And you stayed up there just. As long as, so when did the first, you had to start draft, you had to draft a sine die resolution, right?
Yes.
Because you were going to start doing that.
Yes.
And how'd that go?
Well, I said, well, they had to have one last year. So I looked it up and there it was. And I just changed the dates and stuff and ran it in there. And he looked at it and he said something about some person who was this that drew this.
Right, you know, like an idiot.
That's
like
right.
What kind of idiot drew this?
And I snatched it out of his hand. I said, I don't know, Senator, but I'll go find him and I'll fix it.
I'll find that idiot and I'm going to fix this because this is the worst thing I've ever seen.
So I went back and calmed. First of all, I went to the restroom and perspiration was pouring
right.
all over my body. I mean, I had right off the bat not pleased my boss. But I kind of thought my way through it, drafted it, took it back to him. He said, now this is what I want. And I said, yes, sir, I drafted that one.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah, whoever did it, I've already gotten rid of him.
That's right.
What, I know you're not in the, you're aware of what's going on and you follow yeah. everything. And, but what are the biggest differences that you see? I mean, I know that seniority is still at play, but not near what it was.
That's right. Well, the Senate was based on civility.
Mm-hmm.
And decorum
mm-hmm.
and dignity. And for instance, you could not call anybody by their name. And you had to address in the appropriate way through the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, and at the end of the day, the senior leadership made some decisions for you. That's begotten much more as the two-party system developed.
Right.
Because we were a one-party system at that time. And as the two-party system developed, it's the issues that they deal with have become more political.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more difficult to have that defining line between what is needed and what is, you know, right for the state and what mm-hmm. people want to hear.
Right.
Senator Gressett used to call in the new senators after the election. And I'd sit in on the meeting and he would talk to them about how glad he was that they won. And he wasn't really glad because he was always for the incumbent.
Right.
But
right.
he was very, very gracious and
right.
very nice. And he would say, guys, when it comes down to it, let's just say there's 10 major issues this session. I understand that you have to vote for 6 or 7 of those to protect your seat and protect your constituency. But there's 3 or 4 every year that the state needs,
mm-hmm.
and you got to vote for what is right for the state.
Because mm-hmm. so, you're a state senator.
That's right, a state senator.
You represent your district.
Yeah.
But what... Tell me a story about, I mean, how are things, there was no delineation between, like, people could come in the chamber, right?
That's correct. On the back row.
On the back row. Yes. So any lobbyist could walk in the chamber and sit on that back row, or was it?
That really was kind of reserved for wives of senators, mm-hmm. and a few staff people and guests. They weren't many. The lobbyists were usually found in the gallery.
Yeah, up in the gallery.
Yes.
What can you remember as one of the heated times? Like, what was something that was really just a heated moment that you were kind of in the middle of?
This was based on what I was doing for you that particular night.
Right. Okay.
The Supreme, we had passed a new judicial section for the Constitution.
Okay.
And we established the Court of Appeals. And then we passed legislation creating the manner in which one got elected.
Uh-huh. To the Court of Appeals.
To the Court of Appeals.
Okay.
And it was challenging the Supreme Court because there were some legislators that voted on the issue that okay. also got elected. And the Supreme Court overturned it. So they were reworking the language.
Okay.
And the two of the top senior senators in the Senate got in a fight, Senator Gressett and Senator Lindsey. And they were going at it hard. And it was just tough back and forth. And they both could stand up and just cut you in little pieces.
Right.
And you don't even know it.
Right.
But that night, my oldest daughter,
which was me,
had a dance recital.
That was me.
And I had to go. So I told Frank Caggiano, who was my assistant clerk, listen, man, just get them to adjourn. We're not going to fix it tonight. We'll right. come back tomorrow and we're working. And I left and went to
the township auditorium.
That's right. To see my wonderful daughter dance. And after it was over, I called Frank to say, I'm sure everything's adjourned. He said, well, it is adjourned, but blood is running down the staircase right. down to the first floor.
And you said, oh, good.
And as I walked into the building, Senator Alex Sanders, who was one of the judges that was elected, walked by me in his head like this and said, don't worry, my boy, my career's over.
Right. And you were like, oh, great, thanks, yeah. Senator.
So I had to walk in to Senator Gressett's office, and he was not in a good mood, and convinced him that we had to do some amendments to the bill.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
we got it passed.
Tell me, what advice would you give? First of all, what advice would you give to somebody who wanted to run for the Senate? And I know that you've always thought the Senate was, you know, I mean, you've had,
sure.
you still hold that chamber in such high regard.
Yeah.
We have such wonderful memories of being up there, and some of the, I want to say like maybe one or two members were there, when I was born,
yes.
and that when you served as clerk, Senator Nikki Setzler, I believe, and Senator Harvey Peeler
came in right at the end. Yeah.
Yep. As you were yeah. leaving to retire yeah. after Senator Gressett
That's
passed
right.
away. What advice would you give to somebody who said, Jim, let's sit down and have a drink. I want to run for Senate. I want to be in the Senate.
Well, I mean, the first thing you have to say is, do you have any chance of winning?
Right. Right.
And can you raise money?
Or do you have a secret
yeah, that's
that
right.
somebody knows that yeah. everybody would know and it would ruin you?
And the second thing, are you willing, do you believe in that enough to fight for it?
Right.
And to arouse your constituency and think that you can help them more than the other person.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy task anymore. It's not.
It's not, Dad. It's not cheap either.
You first start with the fact that incumbents have a huge advantage.
Right.
So you have to face that. And then you have to start with the new politics. A distinguished House member told me this one time. Said, think about this. So you got your population at that time in a House district was 35,000.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you take a good bit of that away because it's just voting age population.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wipe out all the non-voting age population. And then you got to eliminate the percentage of voting people. And that's another 50%
right,
that
right.
goes away.
Of the voting age.
Of the voting
the
age.
The people that
that's
actually
right.
vote.
And those who will yeah. actually come out that day.
Right.
And he says, if you have a core group that you can satisfy, it's only 2,000 or 3,000 people, you can win because that core group will vote in a manner which casts much more voting power mm-hmm. than just a normal citizen voting. And so you have to overcome the fact that it's not just issues. Issues are important. Sometimes they're critical for an election, but it's having a support that you can build upon as a foundation to mm-hmm. running a race.
Do you think that's where grassroots campaigns or grassroots movements, they miss the boat, where they don't have that core group of vocal supporters?
Well,
But then they make all the mistakes. But then they make the mistakes of like form letters and, you know, they don't do the old fashioned, which you taught me the meet in person, phone calls, handwritten letters, never a form letter, never a form email. And that's how I have always.
And you ask somebody specific what you want.
Right.
I want you to vote for Senate 80. And this is what it does.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you don't, then you're against us.
What would you, if you could talk to all the, like I had a room full of mayors, what would you, other than good luck, what would you tell them just about, you know, getting an issue through or really, you know, all right, I'll give you an example. So there's a bill sitting out there and you've heard me talk about it, the short-term rental bill.
Absolutely.
There's a group of legislators that want to take away cities and towns' ability to regulate short-term rentals. In order to stop that bill, let's say there's no compromise and we can't do anything about it, and we just have to stop that bill. What would you tell the mayors? What would you say? All right, this is how you're going to do this.
Well, you would start with making sure the people around you mm-hmm. knew that the mayors and the city councils are critical. Mm-hmm. They're the groups that is closest to the people. They're the groups, if they fail, then the quality of life is diminished in that area.
Right.
We're talking about security, safety,
right.
water and sewer.
Infrastructure.
Yeah. Economic development and standard of care. They have to know that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to be vocal in letting people know, in an organized manner, that let somebody help you, like the municipal association. You know, it's all right that you want to do it, and it's all right that you need to be heard. But there are people like I was and mm-hmm. like you are that specialize in how you present, how you get to a vote.
Right.
One time, Casey, you came back from the Ways and Means, and she said, "Dad, I made a great argument. It was right on point. It did the state good. It didn't cost that much. It was good. And they did not accept it. What is wrong?" And I said, "Well, Casey, about 50 or 100 others made the same argument on different things." So
you did. You're like, well, Casey.
In the day's world, you got to look beyond the issue. Look to who is voting on the issue.
Yes.
And how you can get to those. How do you have anybody in your group that has a friend?
Mm-hmm.
Or you have anybody that works on the campaign? You have to go through this. It's an arduous task.
Yeah, it is.
But you have to go through it step by step.
Yeah, relationships.
And then once you get that knowledge, organize it in something that's strategic
mm-hmm.
rather than just reaction
mm-hmm.
so that you use their votes and use their calls and use their efforts at the right time. And that's what I would talk about, this being organized, like through the municipal association.
Right.
And know what you're talking about and know how to go about and help.
And build relationships before you go to them.
Absolutely.
Don't introduce yourself and then say, "Give me my money," or "Stop this bill" or "Pass this bill." Right. You got to make sure that you have a relationship with.
I don't know the day, but back in the day when I was lobbying, if I got as few as 10 phone calls, messages,
mm-hmm.
I had a senator's attention
mm-hmm.
from his constituency, not just
anybody. Right, not just anybody.
That's
right.
Just 10. Then he said, "Well, I got to address this."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many it takes now, like maybe it's emails now or texts.
Right.
But you got to get their attention, and then you got to persuade. And then those two things you do, but you got to do it in an organized manner in which you're not the only voice.
Right. That's right. And when you retire after Marion Gress, Senator Gress that passed away, you started lobbying and you did that for a really long time.
I went to McNair Law Firm.
McNair, which is now Burr Foreman.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you remember when you got your first cell phone?
Yeah.
I mean, were you just, I remember that you had a flip phone.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I threw the first one in the ocean,
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
We were fishing somewhere. And
Well, nobody called me the rest of the week.
Right, it was great. We had a great vacation then. Dad, you can tell all of our listeners who your favorite daughter is.
Yeah.
I have a sister. That's why I'm asking that question. I hope she's listening to this podcast or will listen to this podcast.
I have a t-shirt that says, this shirt is giving me my favorite daughter. So really, I have two t-shirts that says the same right. thing.
Yeah.
Thinking about both daughters. So that's my response.
I think one year for Father's Day, we've each gave him that shirt. But then one year, every time I give him like a mug that says, this mug is from your favorite daughter. I think you know who that is. Dad, tell me one more story about the Senate. Just way back when, I mean, you had huge arguments back then about reapportionment and or redistricting, mm-hmm. and you had, you know, budget fights, and you had, you know, big legislative fights. Do you, when y'all passed home rule, do you remember working on that? Or
I remember. Yes, I certainly do. I remember trying to work out the language, and that mm-hmm. was different. I think the constitutional amendment had passed, and
right.
we were trying to pass the enabling and legislation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a different, and there were some old senators that said, I don't understand this. I get to make all the appointments, make all the decisions, and now you're giving it to somebody else, and they'll do all their friends, and I won't have any friends.
Right.
I said, that's
nice.
Really not an issue, but
yeah, right.
that's
not. Thank you for bringing that
yeah,
up.
Yeah. And it was not, the enabling legislation was not as strong as it could have been or probably should have been,
mm-hmm.
But it was the best one can do in those days with the compromises that had to be made.
Because the power was so vested.
Well, it's still vested. And they had to come a long way. We didn't have like Republican and Democrats, and everybody was a Democrat. It's like everybody's Republican.
Were there any Republicans?
Yeah.
Like a small minority.
Well, we had two when, at the beginning of the Senate, Gilbert McMillan from Aiken and one other one.
Oh, wow. So everybody was a Democrat.
Yeah.
And then in the early 80s, maybe,
yeah.
is that when everybody started
That's right.
switching parties? And so
yeah.
then it became
yeah.
a two-party system.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But we had the Young Turks. It was led by senators like Dick Riley, you know,
mm-hmm.
and Dewey Wise, and those young ones that would come battle the old guard.
Mm-hmm. Was Judge a Young Turk, or was he already in there?
The judge was a Young Turk when it was beneficial to him.
Right.
But he was a Young Turk.
Yeah.
He had great ideas, but I don't know that the senior senators gave much thought to it at the time.
Right. Did they pay much attention to the Young Turks, or...
They did. They eventually did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. But they were more like Senator Williams. And...
Well, I'll tell you one more story.
Okay. All right. This we have time for one more story.
We're battling reapportionment. We got ours passed and the House passed.
And this is 1980.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there was the only one left was congressional districts.
Mm-hmm.
And there was two plans. And the senior senators wanted a plan, and the Turks were pushing another plan. And so... The senior senators won.
Of course.
A mixture of that.
Right.
And so the Young Turks started filibustering and trying to send out, you know, people to get compromises and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so they finally asked everybody to adjourn or go in recess and go into, at that time they had a phone room rather than where offices are now.
Okay.
And it was an office and everybody went in there. They had three or four seats, and that was the senior senator sat at them. And everybody else sat on the floor around.
Right, right. Like story time.
That's right. And Senator Lake, but he wasn't much of a Young Turk, but he was for them on this particular issue because mm-hmm. of vested interest in the district. And he said, and here's what we go offer as a compromise. And he went through his compromise in detail, and we'll do this, and you do that, and you do this. And he turned to Senator Gressett and said, now, what is y'all's compromise? He says, we'll go out there, and if you don't vote for a plan, we'll adjourn. Thank
that
you.
Was it.
That was it.
And Senator Lake was like, oh, okay.
we fought on, and they finally reached it, but Senator Gressett had a very serious illness, and he was mm-hmm. out at that time.
He was not what he used to be.
No,
like
well, he just wasn't
just
there.
In health, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, his health wasn't.
It was remarkable.
When you look back at all the friendships you made during that time, I mean, when you were, you know, started working for the Senate Judiciary,
yes.
How many of those people are your friends today? No matter, like, who cares, Democrat, Republican, but I mean, you have so many lifelong.
They're very close friends.
Yeah.
Certain fellows are like brothers to me.
Mm-hmm.
And dear relationships,
mm-hmm.
and talk long hours. about where we are today versus where we're not.
Right.
And what we need to do. But, there are friendships that are very hard to break that come through that process.
I was going to say, you go through this, I don't know, it's like, and we talk about it a lot on the podcast, it's the bubble. And you live and you work in this bubble.
That's
and not
right.
Very many people understand it unless you are living in it, you know, like, and working in it. And then when you kind of go through that battle with somebody, it's, you know, it's a different relationship.
Yes, it is.
It's a different relationship.
It is. It was a remarkable opportunity for me, Casey.
Yeah.
I don't think of any better education than the 10 years that I had in the Senate. Just mm-hmm. wonderful opportunities, wonderful happenings. My boss thought I was much smarter than I was, so he gave me responsibility for some incredible issues. And so I took great pride in working for it.
When you were at Clemson, is that what, you know, were you like, yeah, I'm going to be a lawyer. I want to go into politics. Is that really what you wanted to do? Because you were at Clemson.
Yeah,
let me frame this.
Okay.
You were at Clemson with Dick Harpootlian, Harvey Peeler, Neil Atkinson, local vet in Columbia. Y'all were all friends. You went to Clemson, still all great friends today. Is that what everybody talked about being? You wanted to get into politics? You wanted to be a lawyer? Or was that?
Different versions, Casey.
Yeah.
Dick was more out in front than most people.
Right, of course.
Yeah. and ran newspapers and was a kind of radical at the time.
Right.
But we all, you know, let me be honest with you, I first changed a majors to go to political science because I want to get out of my math classes.
Right.
But then once I got there, I fell in love with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I fell in love with it and started reading the history of it and that, it became mm-hmm. entangled in my mind. And then being from a rural county when politics was everything
right.
back there, it kind of settled in that way and grew toward going to law school.
And you, John Rowland, my mom's dad, he was, you know, U.S. Marshal and worked at the State House. But your dad, Papa, he was mayor of Macby.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Until he died in 1992.
That's correct.
So you knew what it was like, the local politics.
Well, you and I made a heck of a campaign team. I know that.
Yeah, we did. We did. I was on the cover of the Macby Patrick Ruby Jefferson phone book,
that's
by
right.
the way,
that's
in the
right.
Macby Fall
that's
Festival
right.
Parade, if anybody can find that relic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved, you know, being, I have a name badge, and it's from the Municipal Association annual meeting, and it's the old logo, and it's handwritten. My grand Mimi, it's handwritten Mary Fields Macby. Yeah. So Mimi and Papa must have gone to an annual meeting or something. So I knew, like, I mean, I grew up walking to town hall with Mimi and stamping water bills at Macby Town Hall.
Correct.
So when I started this job, never in my mind did I want to go into local government. Mm-hmm. But when I started this job, I was like, well, I was raised in it.
I will say this in all honesty, when I first started lobbying, I thought the Municipal Association was just another group I had to deal with.
Right.
But
thanks a lot, Dad. Well, that was a long time ago.
But a long time ago. But I've come to realize just how important it is. How important it is that they get their voice heard. How important mm-hmm. it is that we support local government much more stronger than we are
mm-hmm.
so that we can keep, you know, the basic services and our quality of life at a level that the people will be pleased with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very proud of what y'all do.
Dad, speaking of small towns, I have a little trivia question for you, okay? I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this.
All right.
But you're going to give it a shot. What town in South Carolina is the birthplace of Don King, the defensive lineman who played for the NFL in the 1950s? So when you were a mere child, this guy came from a town in South Carolina, similar to one that you know of.
Because of the discussion in this meeting, I would have to go with Macby.
How about that? Are you the other famous person that came out of Macby, or was it Mom?
Mom.
Probably Mom.
Mom. No question.
She's the other famous person that came out of Macby. Dad, any other stories or anything else do you want to talk about, or share with my like two or three. Yeah, really. Yeah. This is something like this just needs to go on because I should have really had Frank sitting in this chair.
That's true.
We'll do that again. Frank was your assistant clerk. And then when you left, he was elected clerk until 2001, I believe.
Yeah.
When he retired. So
I'll tell you one more story.
Okay, one more story.
This is being clerk. And when you start up a session, you bills are flying past, being read,
right,
and going to committee. And so you're real busy. And right before that, the chaplain says a prayer to start the day.
Right.
And we had an incredible chaplain.
George Metz.
George Metz.
Yes.
But he would always walk by and say, "How'd I do today, boys?" And, you know, we were just flipping there. So I mean, oh, good, good, good. Well, Frank developed this. He started having cards. Eight.
No, he did not. And he would give Reverend Metz.
Six and a half. Not that good.
The camaraderie on the desk, too.
Yeah,
I mean, you have to, like, with all the different clerks and...
People don't know what filibusters are today. It goes for a few hours in the night and say, we filibuster.
Right.
We
not
go
really.
For 3, 4, 5 days.
What was the longest you ever had to do? I remember Mom mentioning this, but I don't remember. I was little, I think.
Yeah, you were still crying a lot.
What was the... All right. All right.
Yeah.
What was the longest?
It started Thursday. And the one, the hardest was we started Thursday and we ended Saturday morning.
No way.
And the clerk couldn't go home because he had to be there.
Right.
And you might catch a nap, you know, but that was it. And the battles were back and forth. And during those periods, there's always points of order.
Mm-hmm.
And if you rule against someone, they just became furious.
Right.
Absolutely
right.
Furious. But so those were tough. And then when we had the reapportioned ones, they went on for a long time, but we worked out a system where we could kind of shift people in and shift people out,
mm-hmm,
and make it a little more. At least possible to stay there.
So when the Senate this past session, when they adjourn at like 8 or 9 o'clock at night and they go, "Whoa, that was tough," you're like, "Okay, whatever. I'll show you tough. 3 days is tough, not like a couple of hours at 8, and then you get to go, you know, eat pizza."
And we really enforced Rule 3B when it was called, mm-hmm, to bring all the senators in.
Yeah,
we sent the sled, we sent Highway Patrol, we sent local sheriffs,
and they would leave. I mean, they would leave Columbia.
Oh, yeah.
During and so when it was time.
Had to go find
them. You went to go find them.
And sometimes we found them in places they didn't want us to find
right.
them.
Right.
And I'll not go any farther on that
right.
story.
No, I think that's right. Like at Mary's Celebrity Club? Is that what?
That was a great meeting place.
Or what was the place on Main Street, Dad? Big John. Capital Cafe.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Yeah. I remember you took me to Capital Cafe several times.
I'm sorry.
Times. Yeah. Way to go. That probably gave me an early education.
The late night where you want to. Cup of coffee or a drink of liquor, whatever you wanted, that was where you went.
Right.
And you could always have senators or house members or staff there.
It's different, isn't it?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much.
Dad, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'll ask you back. You did a really good job, so I'll ask you back.
I appreciate that.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.